Ve'era el Avraham el Yitzchak Yaakov bekel Shakai u'shmi Hashem lo nadati le. So the previous pasuk just makes it a little bit more complicated. If you needed more complication in your lives, instead of just saying this is how I've previously introduced myself, the parasha begins Vaydaber Elokim el Moshe v'yom elav ani Hashem. So you have the aspect of Elokim saying to Moshe, Ani Hashem, Va'era el Avraham el Yitzchak v'Yaakov b'shkel Shakai, u'shmi Hashem lo nadati lehem. So over here you have at least three different names of God that need to be understood and reconciled, something which we will not necessarily do today. V'gam hakimoti et briti itam, l'teit lehem et eretz kanan, et eretz mugureim asher garu bo. So, Hakimoti et Briti, I will establish my covenant with them and give them the land of Canaan. Now the truth is, Hakimoti et Briti, does it really mean establish? Does it mean I will fulfill? I'll keep my word? And that itself, at first glance, is a little strange, because why should God tell us he's going to keep his word? Of course God should be keeping his word. I mean, if you can't trust God, then who can you trust? So I'm saying we have at least a perceived problem over here. V'gam ani shamati et na'akat b'nei Yisrael asher mitzrayim ma'avidim otam ve'eskor et priti, I will remember my covenant. So we hear hakimoti et priti ve'eskor et priti, and I only have really one question at this point: and which brit is it that he's referring to? That I want to just put out, which brit, and what may be the hesitation. It then goes into the famous four, or at least four, expressions of redemption. L'chein amor b'nei Yisrael, ani Hashem, v'otzeiti etchem mitachat sivlot Mitzrayim, v'hitzalti etchem ma'av avodotam, v'ga'alti etchem mizronot yov v'shvatim gedolim, v'lakachti etchem li la'am, v'yitim lachem le'elokim, v'yadatim ki nei Hashem lakechem. Motzi etchem mitachat sivlot Mitzrayim. The language over here, and I believe we've observed this before, the language over here is curiously similar to language of marriage. V'lakachti etchem li la'am is very similar. The word to take, to acquire, make an acquisition, v'lakachti, is very similar to the language used by marriage. The idea of v'yadatim is also sometimes connected to intimacy as well. And later on, at the next pasuk, it says, "Vaveti etchem el ha'aretz." This is the fifth language of Geula, which is not always counted, which is actually interesting, because what's the fifth language of Geula? I'm going to take you to the land. Well, what exactly is the covenant that we're talking about? I mean, what's the... So again, I'm going to leave that for a second. When it says, I'm going to, again, Hakimoti et Briti, what is it? L'teit lehem et eretz Kanan. The Brit is, I'm going to give you the land of Canaan, right? V'gam, right, I also heard your cry, B'nai Yisrael, v'eskor et briti, I'm going to remember my Brit. So what's the Brit? Then we have the four languages of Geula, of redemption, which again, we'd like to say, that's the main point. The fifth one is not so relevant, because that's only about the land of Israel, but isn't that the Brit that we're talking about to begin with? And then it ends up, v'natati otam lachem marasha ani Hashem. I'll give it to you as an inheritance, I am God. And again, the language, the word of inheritance, has some similarity to one also of marriage, engagement, and that's the way that Chazal at times applied. And then this word Marasha is only used twice in the Chumash, and once it's talking about the land of Israel, and the other time it's talking about the Torah. So both of these things are seen to be more than just something which God gave on a one-time basis to Am Yisrael. This is something which is considered to be an inheritance of the Jewish people, and of when it says the Jewish people, regarding both of these things, Rav Soloveitchik had expressed that if all the Jews in the world together were to say, we relinquish our rights to the land of Israel, it's not valid because we don't own it. It's owned by the entire Jewish people, and the giant Jewish people are something, Knesset Yisrael, which span throughout history. So over here, really, where do you get that from? That's the Morasha. This is an inheritance, which means it's inheritance, therefore I am just a caretaker, because the next generation has every right to inherit it the same way that I do. And therefore, each generation should see themselves as caretakers, both to the Torah on the one hand, and to the land of Israel on the other hand. And all that we can do is we can take it, we can take care of it, and then we need to pass it on to the next generation. So that's part of this connotation over here. And as I said, there seems to be this theme over here a little bit hinted at the words one of marriage. The main thing I want to focus on is the Brit. So in search of the Brit, let's take a look and see where it is that God made a covenant with the Jewish people to see which covenant it is that is being fulfilled. Now, the term Brit, in terms of God and man, as relating to the Avot, as far as I can tell, is only mentioned twice. It's Brit covenant is not mentioned by all the Avot. It's only mentioned by Avraham, and it's mentioned by Avraham on two different occasions. So let's take a look at the two. The first is has absolutely everything to do with the discussion over here of leaving Egypt. So this is in source number 2, Perek Tetvav. Vayomer la'Avram, Yodea teda ki geriye zarecha be'eretz lo lahem, va'avadum v'inu otam arba ma'ot shana. V'gam et hagoy asher yavodu dan anochi. So you're going to be enslaved for 400 years, and the nation who enslaves you, I'm going to judge them. Why judge them? To see how they treated them, which means there's also propriety in terms of how you treat your slaves. And then you're going to leave, and you're actually going to leave with great wealth. You're not going to lose financially, but it's one of these things which are long-term investments. And by the way, generally long-term investments work better than short-term investments do. The ones that jump around from one investment to the other have a harder time. This is a long-term investment. Va'ata tavo el avotecha b'shalom tikaver b'seva tova v'dor revi'i yeshuvu heina. Fourth generation is to come back. Kilo shalem avona memri ad heina, which means that the land will not become vacated in terms of that the Emori no longer deserve to be here until that point. Skip to pasuk yud chet. Bayom hahu karat Hashem et Avraham brit lemar. On that day, God made a covenant. So here is the covenant. Here is the brit. Lizaracha natati et haaretz hazot minahar Mitzrayim ad nahar hagadol nahar prat. Right? What is the covenant? I'm giving you the land of Israel. So again, when we come back and we realize that this is within the same section, the Brit Bein HaBetarim, you're going to be slaves, you're going to come back, you'll get the land of Israel, I'm making a covenant, I'm going to give you the land of Israel. So it sounds to be that the covenant itself, you want to really be very myopic, so you say the covenant is for the land of Israel. You want to be a little bit broader, you say the covenant is for the land of Israel when we fulfill our debt. And that is that we, debt, I'm calling it a debt right now, maybe there's a better word we can use, when we do our part, and our part is the enslavement for approximately 400 years, or the fourth generation. It goes on to describe the parameters of the land, etakeniv, etakeniv, etakeniziv, etakadmoniv, etakhitiv, epriziv, So this is this whole section over here we're getting. Notably, it is described over here, at least initially, Minahar Mitzrayim ad Nahar Gadol Nahar Prat, which is really, really Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. Okay? This is, they think when we say two sides of the Jordan, I mean, this is obviously far more. So, what is the covenant? The covenant seems to be two elements. One element that we're going to go into slavery. What's the second element? The second element is that God's going to give us the land of Israel. Straight up deal. It sounds like that's the whole that's the whole thing.
Freedom from slavery, that's a component.
That we will be slaves. God will take us out and give us the land. God will take us out and give us the land. And therefore, when we read over here, in the beginning of our parsha, God says, I'm going to keep the Brit. Well, what do you mean you're going to keep the Brit? We've been slaves. Now, you could start to perhaps bring up the issue of the timeline over here. And maybe that's important. I'm not going to go into it. But maybe that's important. 400 years or the fourth generation. What are you talking about? The Mechilta raises the question and ends up saying that certain things need to be accomplished. And the minimum amount of time to accomplish it is four generations. The maximum amount is 400 years. So over here, at least according to our traditional understanding, they've only been slaves for 86 years. They've been in the land of Egypt for 210 years. The differential between the two is the slavery doesn't begin until the last of the of the brothers of Yosef passes away, God has his creativity on how he can count this. I gave a shiur, when was it? It must have been Chet Tevet. I gave a shiur about the translation of the Torah into Greek. And one of the things it says that there was 70 scholars put Targum HaShivim, 70 Septuagint, 70 scholars put into 70 different rooms and each one to translate, and miraculously they all came to the same translation. Rav Huttner said about that, if the 70 different rooms make sense, if they all would have been in the same room, let's see them come up with the same translation. that would have been far more impressive to see rabbis agree with one another. But be that as it may, one of the things that they all changed was it says that you will be slaves in a land which isn't yours, right? So it's, or it says after the amount of time, the Jews were enslaved in Egypt and other lands. It was put in and other lands. And the connotation there is that the land of Israel as well is included, because you're going to be enslaved in a land that isn't yours. So, or you're going to be strangers in a land which isn't yours. You're going to be strangers in a land which isn't yours, and you'll be enslaved. So, it doesn't mean that that's the same thing at the same time. So, it could be they were already strangers in their own land from the very beginning, because it wasn't, they did not own it. And you see the way that they conduct themselves in the land, it's not the way that an owner conducts the land. They're basically, by the way, the biggest indication of this happens to be their vocation. Why? Because they're nomads. They're shepherds that wander from place to place. They're not farmers. Farmers settle the land, have one land, and they're able to really show real ownership of the land, unless you're going to say that Avram planted Eshel, but that doesn't seem to be this long-term relationship of the land. Yitzchak plants Mei Sha'arim, Avram plants Eshel, Yitzchak Mei Sha'arim. With Yaakov, we find the wandering. We find Yaakov is really the wandering Jew, and even among his sons, we find, you know, go off. And it sounds very funny. You know, they're all the way there by Hebron. They go off to Shechem. They're Bedouin. They're Bedouin wandering from place to place with their flock. And yeah, okay, good. Go tell the international court, okay? See how that works out. So over here, if, again, we are investigating what is the covenant, so it seems to be straightforward, the covenant really is the slavery connected to the liberation, connected to the land of Israel, and that's all that. But of course we know that it's not so simple. Yeah, God takes them out till they get to the land. It's a long time. So now you say, okay, that's not really our story now. Those are elements that are going to take later on. So let's pause for a second and look at the other time that he uses the word Brit within the connection with the Avot. And that's in source number 3. Vayi Avram ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim, vayira Hashem al Avraham v'yom elav ani kel shakai, hitalech lefanai v'yet tamim. So Avram's 99 years old. God appears to him and he says to him, I am kel shakai, walk in front of me and be perfect or complete. Now, before I go any further, can somebody tell me why this may be relevant anyway to our discussion, even though you don't know that the word Brit will be here? Why is this relevant? Right? Because the reference point that we had in the very beginning of the parasha was, I have appeared as Kel Shakai. Well, guess what? This is the first time that the name Shakai is used in the Torah. So if this is the first, yes? This is the first not time that name Shakai is used in the Torah. If this is the first time that it's used in the Torah, that this is the reference point that is being referred to in the very beginning of Va'era. Continue in source number 3, Perek Yitzayin. The etne briti beni uveinecha, the arbe otcha b'maod maod, and I will make my covenant with you, and you will be increased in number. Incidentally, every single time the name Shakai is used in the rest of Bereshit, there's one that you'd give me a hard time about, but it's what I'm going to say counts there as well. Every single time the name Shakai is used, it's relating to issues of having children and issues of fertility. The name is connected to fertility. If you want to, anybody want to debate that point, or do you want to see that this is the case, or nope, it's good he's not here. Absolutely, the name is connected to fertility. The next time it's used is in Perek Kof Chet. In Bereshit, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, vayivarech oto, vayitzaveh, vayomer lo lotikach isha mibnot Kanan, kum leich padana aram beita betuel, avi imecha, vakach v'chamisham isha mibnot lavan achi imecha, vikel shakai yivarech otcha, vayifarcha, vayirbecha, vayita lakal amim. So I'm saying it has to do with children. The third time that it's used, Vayom Perik Lamed Hey Vayom Lo Lokim Shemcha Yaakov Lo Yikore Shemcha Od Yaakov Ki Im Yisrael Ya Shemecha Vikra Et Shmo Yisrael Vayom Lo Lokim Ani Kel Shakai Pire Urve Goy Ukahal Goyim Ye Mimecha. I mean, so again, it uses the term of fertility. The one you can question is Perik Mem Gimel, when Yaakov is sending a message to his sons to convey, he's sending Binyamin over, and he prays that Binyamin not get killed, not to lose a child, and he says, V'kel shakaitin lachem rachamim lefnei ha'ish, and that ish, unbeknownst to him, is actually Yosef, and that is where it's the one time, as I said, you can argue with me, but in Perek Memchet, Yosef, Yaakov repeats to Yosef, one of the previous ones, Vayom Yaakov Yosef, Kel Shakai Nirei Elai Beluzber, it's Kanan Vavrechoti, Vayomer Elai, Hinani Marfucha Vrbiticha, Vnetatich Lakal Amim. The final time that it's used in Bereshit, and by the way, this is the final time in the Torah, other than right here, in the beginning of the era. It's never used again after over here in the era. And over here in Perek Merintet is the bracha to Yosef. I'm not going to read the whole bracha. It begins, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin, and I'm skipping a little bit, and it says, Mekel avicha v'yazrecha v'et shaddai v'yivrechecha, brichot shamayim me'al, brichot tahomer v'tetachad, brichot shaddayim v'racham. I don't know how you can translate this other than understanding this. Literally, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. Brachot avicha gavrua brachot harai atavat kevot olam tiyana the rosh yosef ulukad kod nizirecha. That all of these blessings are going to come up, all the blessings received previously are all going down to Yosef, unto Yosef. And this is this bracha of again, with all due respect to what Rav Breuer said or may have said, that he thinks Shaddai doesn't have to do it. And I would even go further than this. I would even suggest that Shaddai may actually have a connotation of breasts, Shaddai and Veracham. And that's part of this idea of the fertility within the bracha, which means that it's almost to suggest that it's the idea of God as a mother who sustains his children. That would be the... What?
Her children.
Right, that would be the name. And then it's very interesting to have that name on a mezuzah. So therefore, you know, this protection of the house and so on. Even though we like to know it's not really protection, even those who say it's not also admit that there really is at least some concept of this. But what's very interesting is that the name is initially connected to Brit Milah. And the Gemara says, what does it mean? So the Gemara tells us in Chagiga, it says Daf Yud Bet. V'Amor of Yehuda Marav B'Sha'a Shabara Kadosh Baruch Hu Et Olam Hayamarchiv V'Holech K'Shtei Pikiot Shel Sheti. When God created the world, it expanded and expanded and expanded. Now I want to pause here for a second. The name which is associated with creation is Elokim. Elokim is connected to nature, so much so that there were even those who insist the name Elokim, the most important aspect of it, is not what you're going to tell me judgment, but they said Elokim begematria is hateva, is nature. Now those of you who are going to try it, it's not going to work if you use a kuf. It only works if you spell it with a hey, right? So I've had to do it. No, it doesn't work, right? I spell it now, because they don't realize that this actually Elokim is spelled with a hey. It does come out with nature. Bereshit bar Elokim is this beginning of nature. Now, what this Gemara then is saying is when God created, nature just expands. So, and then, let's continue and then I'll explain what I think the Gemara means. And then continues and it says, V'hainu d'amorei shlakish, I skipped a little bit, May dichtev ani kel shakai anihu shamarti lolam dai. I'm the one who said, stop, limitations. Which means the basic idea of Elokim is one of nature. Nature expands, but what I think this means is that when we follow nature, we can just look at ourselves as biological beings, and we just follow instinct. So instinct is just expansive, and we just go in anything that feels right, and we can then make excuses. This is our instinct. This is who we are. So what does the name Shaddai come in? Ani shamarti lolam dai. Stop. limitations. The fact that that's connected to Brit Milah is, I think, incredibly significant, which means the name does not occur until Avram becomes 99 years old. Avram is 99 years old. He's Shaddai reveals this aspect. It's told, your name is going to change. Why is his name changing over here? Why is Avram's name change over here? Because he just had a bris, right? What are the elements of, what are the important elements of a bris? Bagels. Bagels. They surely served bagels, lox, and the baby gets a name. Avram has a bris milah. He gets a new name. I'm saying that should not be so surprising. By the way, did you notice that that's the name that was introduced when Yaakov gets his new name as well? Yaakov gets its revelation, gets its blessing in terms of Shaddai. You're no longer Yaakov, you're Yisrael. That's the reference that Yaakov comes back in and says again to Yosef. God appeared to me, Bekel Shaddai. And that's the point that it becomes Yisrael. So I'm saying this connection is not as bad as perhaps you think it is. And then we can start talking about the Jewish people growing and growing and growing. Okay, now, keep all of this in mind for a second. And let's go back to what I thought was the main point that we're trying to work on. What is that? Which covenant are we dealing with? And now let's all admit something. In normal language today, when we say, oh, he's going to have a bris, right? Generally what we mean by that is we're talking about the bris milah. Now that could just be because we don't talk about these other covenants. So I want to raise the question again now. When we're told over here that God appears to him and says, I'm going to keep my bris, so which one is it? Now, of course, whenever you have two possibilities, you have three possibilities. What's the first possibility? He's talking about by the bris ben habsar. What's the second possibility? He's talking about when he gives him the covenant and he gives him the mitzvah of bris. What's the third possibility? Both. Therefore, it's not like the second one superseded the first one. It's that the second one is added on to the first one. But if it adds on to the first one, so this is like one more rider in the contract that we didn't notice beforehand. Okay, one more condition. And over here, there is, by the way, you also have to ask on the other hand, so what's God adding to it if he's...
The Jews weren't Nimolim.
Stop. We're not up to what the Jews were still by Avraham. We'll come to them in a second. That's exactly where we need to go to. But still, over here, when we look at the description back in source number 2, in source number 3, Pasuk Zayin, V'hakimoti et briti b'ni uvenechu v'in zarecha charech l'dorot tam l'brit olam. L'yot l'cha l'elokim v'l'zarecha acharecha v'natat l'cha zarecha acharecha et eretz megurecha v'et kol eretz kanan l'chuzat olam. Vayiti lahem lelokim, vayomim alavram, vatai briti tishmor, vatav zaracha acharecha ledorotam. Zot briti tishmuru beni venechum, vain zaracha acharecha, himolachem kozachar. Unamaltem et pisar latchem, vayad laot briti, brit beni venechem. And goes on again, ledorotechem, goes on, brit bisarchem, lebrit olam, and so on and so forth. Now, somebody who doesn't keep this, he has cut himself off from the people, for he has broken the covenant. Now, when the Jews were in Egypt, to what extent did they retain Judaism? Now, of course, this is a very bad question. Of course, it's a very bad question, but it depends. I mean, some people can get themselves quite worked up on this question, and perhaps this is going to be the extension of something else. Within sometimes the midrashic imagination, which I don't believe is literal or should be taken literally, but sometimes within the midrashic imagination, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and families, they kept the entire Torah. It actually never says they kept it, it says they fulfilled it. I think there's a very big difference between fulfilling the Torah versus keeping the Torah. I think fulfilling would point at a spiritual level. For example, should I say that because I put my tefillin on this morning that I'm on a higher level than Avraham who never saw a pair of tefillin? Or says, no, Avraham kept it, which means the inner dynamic of whatever spiritual possibilities can emerge from putting on tefillin, Avram got to that same level without putting on the tefillin. I think that's what it means that Avram, that the other were mekayim the Torah. That's what I would think, and although clearly people could differ with me. Now, there's a teaching that some of us know from some place. If you want, we'll see it inside, if it exists. And that is that the Jews in Egypt, they sunk to the 49th level of Tumah. Yes? Is there such a source or no? There is such a source. What's questionable, though, is a source that says had they remained one more moment, then they would have disappeared. That's a source which is elusive. But to say they sunk to the 49th level of Tumah is a source which exists. If you need to see it, you could take a look at source number 10. It's from the Zohar. As of right now, just look at the last line on page 2. It says, Shira'u tachut arba'in v'tisha chele de sa'abuta. They sunk to the 49th level of Tumah. That's without reading it in context. Perhaps we should read it in context, but let's hold off on that at least for a moment. Now, when the Jews sunk to the 49th level of Tumah, so what exactly is it that they did? Or what is it they didn't do? Which means we have all kinds, you know, we have 613 commandments, 248 positive, 365 negative. So what kind of creative and funky sins were they guilty of? I mean, what exactly does it mean that they sunk to such terrible levels? So like, what was it? They didn't keep second day Yontif when they were in Pesach, when they were in Egypt? Was it that they learned on Nitelnacht? Like what were No, they kept that. They didn't learn a Nitelnacht. And they were even machmi even on the Greek Orthodox one they didn't learn. Meaning, the point is, like, what exactly does this mean they sung so low? So of all things, and what I'm going to say now is just so, there's really only two possibilities. If you really think about it, there's only two possibilities of what they could have done, and for all we know, it was both of them. What are the two possibilities? What? Stop. Right. By the way, dress, the whole famous thing, they didn't keep three things. Dress is not, it does not appear in the Midrash. Dress, somebody made up, and of course, they probably had students who weren't dressing properly, and they had to give them some mussar about it. By the way, they didn't change their dress, it doesn't say. It says they didn't change the language, they didn't change their names, their language, No, the funnier thing is, it says that when they left Egypt, they went and they borrowed all the clothes from the Egyptians. And what do they do with them? They borrowed the mini dresses from the Egyptian girls. Knew now what? So that's what caused all the problems afterwards. But in all of the known midrashim, it does not say dress. It says language. It says clothing. It says they didn't reveal their secret. Some of them it uses a fourth thing as well. But dress really isn't there. But it makes for good musar. So that's why. It's quite important. But when you ask for the obvious things of when you say they didn't keep, so what was it? What was really their Judaism at that point? So it really should have come down to only two things. One would be a positive commandment, and one we can probably call it or as a negative commandment. But one would have been idolatry. You know what I'm saying? The other way around. One could have been idolatry. The other was Brit Milah. That's what it was, which means... What's exactly the covenant that exists? Believe in one God, monotheism, accepting monotheism. So did they remember monotheism? Did they forget their monotheism? The other thing is, the only real mitzvah they have, don't argue with me, oh, they kept Brit Milah because they became so numerous. Okay, I'll concede that. But I don't know, do you have to have kavana? Okay, I'm not going there at all. But what was the other thing? The other thing is clearly, you want to say Gidanasha, they didn't get Gidanasha, okay, so that's what kept them Jewish. They had special restaurants in Egypt. We keep Gidanasha, okay, maybe, I don't know. But the real elements, which exist, and one emerges from the other, the real thing is to believe in one God, and the other thing is to keep Milah. What the Zohar is pointing out over here is that they didn't believe in one God anymore. Sinking to the 49th level of Tumah is really an expression of worshiping the gods of Egypt. The other element we find in Midrash Rabbah in source number 8. L'ficha k'tiv ve'yakam melech chadash. Rabbanan patchin pitcha lahaykra. When the rabbis taught this pasuk in Hosea, they introduced it as follows. What's the pasuk? Bashem bagdu kivanim zarim yoldu ata yolichem chodesh et chalkehim. L'madecha kishemet Yosef hifru brit mila. Hiferu brit mila amru nihyeh kimitzrim. They broke brit mila and they said, let us assimilate, let us be like the Egyptians. So I'm saying, here you have a midrash, black and white. By the way, even according to the famous teaching, that they kept their names and they kept the, and, the, and, the, and they kept their language. And if you want, they kept their clothing. So what didn't they keep? Exactly what didn't they keep? They didn't keep Brit Milah. So I'll say it again. When the midrash stresses that despite being terrible in all kinds of ways, but they kept these things, so then what was it terrible in? So again, it has to be idolatry, meaning... If, I'm going to say it again. Is the Midrash trying to tell you that they kept their clothes, they kept their names, they kept their language, right? But I'll say it again if you want. But they didn't keep Second Day Yantuv, and that's why God. Again, I can imagine a rabbi getting up and saying this. I just would find it very amusing. Is there a question? Yeah.
There is a picture in the Bible landscape scene from ancient Egypt showing a circumcision being performed, which should imply that the Egyptians had circumcision.
Okay.
So that raises a number of issues. It could be they kept this, but without the content, without the meaning of the legion because they're going to be like the Egyptians. So the very guts of it have been torn out.
Right.
It could also be that the
Midrash
is talking about
this. Right, but I would also raise the question, at which point in ancient Egypt was this, does this come from?
What about when Batya finds little Moshe? Doesn't she know he's a Hebrew baby?
Of course she knows. It says, oh, this is one of the Hebrew, of course she knows.
Because of the Brit Milah?
No, because he's in the water.
He's in color. Maybe
I'm black or whatever. Okay. So... But my introducing over here this question of a Brit Milah, and over here seeing the Midrash Rabbah saying, no, they didn't keep my Brit Milah on the one hand, seeing the Zohar saying on the other hand that they were guilty of idolatry. This is also something which you've heard in many cases. You also have source number 9, Midrash saying the same kind of thing. But I do want to raise a question. That when we're told that a new paro, because that's really the context of this midrash, that a new leader comes up who doesn't remember Yosef, so everyone else remembers Yosef, or it's just he doesn't remember Yosef, or perhaps does this mean that the Jews don't remember Yosef, and therefore paro doesn't remember Yosef as well? And the other thing that I want to point out is that, and this I'm very serious about, that the name, as we saw before, the name Shaddai is connected to Brit Milah. The name Shaddai is connected more so to Yosef than anybody else. Yosef receives those brachot, and Yosef is the one more than anybody else who is what we can call, knows how to say Dai. Yosef is the one who we can call Shomer HaBrit. So therefore, have the Jews who've been in Egypt, forget about circumcision per se right now, because that may actually now realize much more of a metaphor. Are the Jews sleeping with the enemy, or are they keeping separate? Now, by the way, that's also one of the things that the other Midrash says, no, they did keep separate, but that's something which I think is conflicting through various Midrashim. The Zohar over here, now let's look at it again, and now let's try to read it much more in context. Amalei Haida Kodesh Baruch Hu Midkar Lahon Yisrael B'kol Atar V'Atar. This Midrash, this Zohar is actually talking about Anochi, it's in Yitro, talking about the Ten Commandments. I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. Anochi Hashem Lekecha Shotzi Techa Me'eretz Yisrael. Ani Hashem Lekecha Meshotzeti Etchem Me'eretz Yisrael. My Rabuta, what does it mean to say, I took you out of Egypt? Ulvachatana Shalim, who had the Amr La'avim Kigiri Azarchar Be'eretz Lo Lahem, Vagomer. V'acharei Chen, Yitzu B'Rush Gadol. The fact that God took us out of Egypt is exactly what God said, right? This is what we said from the very beginning. I'm going to take you down, then I'm going to take you out. This is the covenant. God remembers the covenant. In Cain, Lama La'ad Kura Lahun Milta, duh, B'chol Atar V'Atar. Why do you have to keep saying, I'm God who took you out of Egypt? That was the whole deal. The deal was, you're going to go down to Egypt. What's the big, again, what's the covenant by the Brit Bein HaBetarim? You're going to be slaves in a land which isn't yours, and I'm going to take you out and give you the land of Egypt. So now God says, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. Yeah? You were contractually obligated to take us out of Egypt. Why do you... It's not nice what the Zohar is saying here. What's it saying? Why do you keep bragging that you took us out of Egypt? That was the contract. Ah, I kept my side of the contract. Again, okay, look, for Jews, this is a big thing. But we're talking about God. So this is exactly where the Zohar is then going. Omule tochazi. This is the same thing where the Gemara always says, Toshma, come and listen. With the Zohar, it's always, come and see. Tochazi. Bori Kodesh Baruch Hu lo itnei im Avram elo di yofik yat Yisrael min galuta di Mitzrayim v'lo mitchot shi ubuda di dichla achra. That the deal was that the Jews remain dedicated to God and don't start worshiping other gods. Shibuda de dichla achra. Devada Yisrael kahava b'mitrayim ist'abu ve'itnatfu v'garmihun b'chozini misabi. Sharon tachat arbin v'tesha chile misabuta. The Jews worshipped every single idolatry and ended up sinking to the 49th level of Tumah. So the context over here is actually far more interesting than when I just read it out of context. The context is, why do we keep stressing that God kept his side of the deal? So what's the answer? Because we didn't keep our side of the deal. And if we didn't keep our side of the deal, so now we realize that one can easily say that all bets are off. And therefore, even God said, you'll be slave 400 years, I'll take you out. But that's only if we still have a relationship. If we don't have a relationship anymore, so what do you mean I'm going to still take you out? You've rejected me. You've worshipped other gods. This covenant is over. So right now I'm reading what the Zohar says. The Zohar asked a question which we don't like to ask, and that is, why does God keep bragging, I took you out of Egypt? And the answer is, because I didn't have to take you out of Egypt. And why didn't I have to? Because this was a covenant, and a covenant is between two sides, and both sides have to keep their side to it. And the way that I phrased it the first time, well, we have to be slaves, and then we come out. And God is saying no, because it's actually two parts of the covenant. What's the second part of the covenant? The second one, which was added on in terms of Brit Milah, in terms of this new relationship between God and the Jewish people, or at that point between God and Avram, and what it's trying to point out is that the Jews did not keep their side of it. And I'm saying it again, that this now subdivides into two different aspects. The positive aspect of Brit Milah, which again, this special relationship, but the flip side of this is not worshiping other gods. And if Jews are worshiping other gods, then God says, okay, there's no relationship. This contract is at this point null and void. Don't argue with me. I'm saying that's what the Zohar is saying. Over you still, you want to argue with the Zohar, right? Yeah.
Women have no part in this. And as far as idol worship, were they worshiping idols as well?
Why not?
Okay, they could be, but I'm talking about the.
You have a nice attitude about women that they're.
The front women, they get the front.
All right,
but.
Esther.
If the.
You have your husband to support you now. Both of you are going to team up against me, I see.
I just want to emphasize what I understood.
Yeah.
It's not just Pharaoh who forgot Yosef. It's also the Jewish people.
That's what I was suggesting.
Once they forgot Yosef, then they forgot God and everything connected.
That's it, correct. That's what I was suggesting. Is that Pharaoh's forgetting of Yosef is a reaction to the Jews forgetting of Yosef. Okay.
Yeah, that's that.
But you also speak about the Jews redeeming because of the women.
Yeah. First of all, don't ever quote me something I said. That's completely. the first person I'm going to reject and say, what is.
No.
To say that they were saved because of the women does not mean no women were guilty. It just means that because of some heroic behavior of some women, they were saved. I mean, you can't go completely that way. That's not really fair. Just to see how far this idea goes, look at source number 11. Because this is one of the famous expressions of it, even though it's not Yitziat Mitzrayim per se, it's the splitting of the sea. So it's really, we should have saved this for next week. Who knows what I'll talk about next week. Look at source number, not next week, 2 weeks. Look at source 11. Amar v'chamar barchanina b'shasha yatzu yisro mi Mitzrayim amad sama'el hamalach lekatregotam. This it's really angel of Esav stands up as a, but he's also sometimes the Satan. He stands up and he complains. Rav Chama Bar Chanina Pirsha Mishum Aviv Moshe Leroa Shahayim Avir Tzono Benahar Bazaev Lehitgarot Batzon. It's sort of like compared to somebody, a shepherd who's taking his flock across the field, across a river, and a fox comes to attack them. A wolf. Roe Shahaya Baki Ma'asa, a real professional shepherd, what does he do? Natal Tayish Gadol, he takes a big Tayish. What's a Tayish? Takes a big goat, Umasrolo, and gives it over. Amar, it takes a real big one that can handle some of the pressure. Amar Yehe Mitgashesh Bazeh, come, have fun with this. Nahar, and then he crosses all the animals to the other side. And then I'm going to go back for that one. Kach, now listen to the Nimshol over here. Kach, Amad Sama El Hamalach LeKatregotam, Amar Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Ribonu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Adach Shav Hayu Elu, Ovdim Ovodat Kochavim, Vata Korea Lahem Atayam. They're also sinners. How can you split the sea for them? This is just not fair. It's not right. Masa Kadosh Baruch Hu, Masar Lo Eov. He gave Eov, a whole story of Eov over here, it's sticking into this context. He gave him Eov, Shoya Miyotse Paro, Duchtiv Bo, Ishtam Vyashar, Amalo, Hey Nubiyatcha, here. You torture Eov a little bit. Amal Kadosh Baruch Hu, Anshu Mitasekim Eov, Yisrael Olim Liyam Vyardim, Vacha Kachatzil Eov. Now, the truth is that this is very interesting. Yeah. So why are we sacrificing Eov? So by the way, the Seir La'Azazel, was the Seir La'Azazel himself guilty, or was the Seir La'Azazel innocent? So it's a big goat. You take Eov. You go destroy his life, kill his everybody. You know, but, I mean, I've said this before. The first chapter of Eov is the inspiration for the Wizard of Oz. Right? It happens the. I'm not kidding about this. It happens the land of Oz, and you have a big hurricane coming, and the house goes up in the air, and then it lands on. I mean, the whole beginning scene over there is from the Wizard of Oz is over here. But of course, you have the bad witch, and the bad witch is the Satan, and it's putting the Satan Samael putting into this story. But what's fascinating is that sometimes you just look at this, and what's the whole story of Eov? The whole story of Eov is Tzadik Varalo. He's such a good person. How could such a bad thing happen? And what is this midrash saying? He goes, no. You need to broaden the canvas a little bit and say this is not the whole story taking place in the world at this time. There's a broader context over here. And what's the broader context? That Am Yisrael is trying to cross over. Satan is bothering him. So God then says, here, take Eov over here. In the meantime, deal with Eov so that he's saving God at the same time. Of course, you're going to ask why can't God do both things? But I do want to remind you one other point, which. It's always significant, but it's significant now as at least as much as other times, maybe more. And again, I'm going back to something which Rav Soloveitchik said, that Eov is said to be one of, and that's what it says here as well, he's one of the advisors of Paro. So this is part of this larger midrash that says that Paro has three advisors. And Paro raises the all-important historical question, how do we solve the Jewish problem? Right, and once you raise it like that, you already know where we're going. So one of his advisors is a man named Bilam. Bilam, Bileam. Bilam says genocide is the answer. Kill them all. On the other hand, we have the person who ends up supporting the Jews, and that's Yitro. Yitro says that's not a moral way to act, and Yitro is one of the advisors, according to the Midrash, says that no, you can't go killing people with indiscriminately. That's wrong. And then there was a third advisor. Who was the third advisor? It was Eov. And what did Eov say? Well, Eov says nothing, because that's Eov. Eov is silent. Silent like Job. Eov is silent and says nothing. So how do we understand his silence? That Eov basically was Switzerland. And Switzerland. And Eov says that we retain our neutral stance in this era, neutrality, and we don't think that we should be getting involved in this one way or the other, and therefore we are silent. And they can think that they're complete tzaddikim, because they're silent, because they didn't get involved. Right? You can turn your silence into an ideology. We refuse to take sides in such things, and therefore we're great tzaddikim. So, what's the response then? That to be silent in the face of Nazism is not considered to be righteous behavior. And therefore, any time great and righteous people choose to be silent when there are atrocities taking place, there is something which is morally wrong with that. And over here, Eov, who is introduced over here as one of the advisors of Paro, and God says, okay, why don't you go take care of the big tzaddik Eov over here? Because again, what's the ultimate problem with him? The only offerings he brings according to the number of children that he has. The only prayers that he gives are when they're personal. The only pain that he feels is when it's his own. Because he's neutral. Who am I to take sides? So essentially God's response to him is, you can only feel your own pain? So I'll give you some of your own pain. And what's the resolution at the very end of the book? God says, pray for other people as well. Pray for your friends, pray for others. Which means the end of the story of Eov is God encourages Eov to stop his neutrality, to stop and start getting involved, to start praying for others, to stop being quiet. So over here, what you have is the illusion of somebody being a tzaddik. So I'm saying it's very interesting over here, but as I said, that's a whole side part of the story. The more interesting part of the story for us is that God, when it came to splitting the sea, that was not a very simple decision to make theologically. Because how exactly do you go about splitting the sea when the Jews are unworthy of splitting the sea? So in terms of real Midat HaDin, the Jews don't deserve it. Of course I can go back and say that there's a covenant, and what does it mean? I'm going to take you out of Egypt, but only to drown in the sea, so there's something missing. But again, this tension over here, in terms of really deserving to be saved, that's what's being raised in this Midrash. But you wanted to say something. You look like you wanted to say something. You're saving it. Later, okay.
Just wanted to raise another thing. All the discussion about the mitzvot, which were kept or not kept, I don't hear anything about Benoni and Chavera. We hear about Idol worship, we hear about the Mila. All things that are said to be Jewish.
So my quick response to you is going to be that may be the purpose for the servitude to begin with. Many, many times afterwards in the Torah, it's going to come back and say, don't treat others the way that you were treated, meaning you were slaves and you should know better, which means the sensitivity which the Jews are supposed to develop is because you were abused, you should know better. And by the way, let's appreciate something. If somebody is abused, you can have at least three responses to abuse. One response to abuse could become an abuser. One response to abuse is just to be silent and keep it inside. One response to abuse can be saying, I'm going to make sure that this cycle of abuse stops and I'm going to make the world into a better place because I know what it feels like. And that's what the Torah calls upon us. So therefore, if you're interested in the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro emerging from all of this, God keeps on footnoting it. Lots and lots of mitzvot, he keeps coming back and saying, oh, look, I believe it says 36 times in the Torah, not to treat people the slaves, because you were slaves in Egypt. If I'm not mistaken, this passage in the Zohar that we started with, I think it says on 50, it says 49 levels, I think it says, and therefore 50 times the Torah is going to say, that remember that you were slaves in Egypt. I don't know exactly how they got to 50, but unless it's just saying, oh, the 49 levels, now you have to improve it, like one level better, and get up to 50. So that could be more of a symbolic number, but I think that does address what your concern is. So now, let me go back, yeah.
Well, I think the concept of the Masorah that Avraham had when he gave over is basically a Beit Adam L'Chaveiro. First of all, you have the Baruch Hu referring to each set of three children. And then the whole idea of Masorah was not one of blue mitzvahs. It was one of how you relate to your fellow man. That was the teaching of Avraham.
Yes, you're right. We have the halal out there with Zara.
That's right.
Right.
But
what's the difference except redemption?
Hopefully. Hopefully. Okay, keeping this in mind, that the Brit Milah may have been broken, I think will help us appreciate and understand at least two different elements. One is within the context of Korban Pesach. I'll do that second. I have to go the order you want me to go to. The first is take a look at source number 13. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'Aaron, zod chukata pasach, kol b'nechar lo yochal bo. In order to be able to participate in the Korban Pesach, you cannot be a ben nechar. You can't be somebody who is foreign. It goes on to say, "V'kol eved ish miknet kesef u'malta oto az yochal bo." Only if they had a brit milah. Toshav esachir lo yochal bo bebayit echad yochal lo totzim min habayit. Skip a little bit. Kol adat Yisrael yaasu oto v'chi agur itcha ger v'asa pesach l'Hashem himo lo kol zochar, and then he can eat it. Which means this insistence of the relationship between the Korban Pesach and between Brit Milah, which ironically, or not ironically, maybe very specifically, these are the only positive mitzvot that the lack of fulfillment of those mitzvot are guilty with the supreme punishment of karet, of being taken apart from the people. So apparently, peoplehood is defined by two things, which may actually now we understand to be completely interrelated, and that is Brit Milah on the one hand and the Korban Pesach on the other. And there's actually an argument over here, because this is in Perek Yud Bet, which is where the whole commandment of Pesach is introduced, and this is all the way down by Pasuk Mem Gimel. This was not the original or the initial commandment. This, according to some, like the Ibn Ezra, is really Pesach Ledorot. It's Pesach for the future. On the other hand, the Ramban is quite strident in source number 14, that he says, no, this is Miyad Uladorot, that this is not just something in the future, some kind of technicality, you need to have a Brit Milah to eat from the Korban Pesach if you're a male. He says, no, this was how they got out of Egypt. So, in fact, I came across a Midrash that quite clearly supports the... Let me just see if I can find it quickly. Okay, I don't see it right now. That quite clearly supports the Ramban, that the idea that Moshe... Let me just see. No, it's in source number 8. L'lamdecha kishemet Yosef hifaru brit milah omuniye kimitzru mikana tolamad shemoshe mal'an bitziyatan mitzrayim. That Moshe performed Brit Milah on them when they left Egypt. So as I said, that, as far as I'm concerned, black and white supports the Ramban's reading of the verses, that this is not just L'dorot, it's also L'dorot. But I think it's stronger the way we see in the Midrashian context. They stopped keeping Brit Milah, they said, let's be like the Egyptians, and in order to leave, but I'm saying, it's not just a technical thing. What did we see from the Zohar? That the whole covenant can fall apart because of this, because the covenant was... First part, I'm going to give you the land, you'll be slaves, I'll give you the land of Israel. Second part, continuation, I'm going to make a special relationship with you. That special relationship is based upon the Brit Milah. When they say, when I keep the Brit Milah, and again, I keep saying, and the flip side of this, and they worship idols, so from God's perspective, there's nothing to talk about. When God, according to the Zohar, then brags, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. Yeah, because I didn't have to, because you didn't keep your side of it. So therefore, now we understand the insistence that they have to do the Brit Milah in order to leave Egypt. And this can help us understand one more thing, but let me just see how much time we have. If we go straight to that last thing or not. There's a couple of really interesting Rambans, which I'm not going to have time to do, I'm not going to be able to do properly. The first Ramban is source 16. The Ramban is on Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Bet, and I did not give you the whole Pasuk, and I did not give you the whole Ramban, but let me read you the Pasuk. Pasuk before says, "Vayomer Moshe el Elokim, mi anochi ki leichal paro v'chi yotzia b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim." Who am I to go to Paro? Am I really going to take them out? Now, normally, how do we understand that? That Moshe is feeling inadequate. May not be the pshat. Next pasuk says, "Vayomer ki eimach, I'll be with you." V'zelacha ha'ot ki anochi shlechticha, and that's the, and this is the sign. Now, the question that I want to raise is, what does the word "ot" mean over here in this context? What does oat mean? Because normally, the way it keeps continuing, I'm going to give you signs and wonders, and you're going to take a staff and you're going to turn it into a snake, and you're going to... I mean, there are always these signs. So what's the oat over here?
Okay, so
You're going to serve God. So now again, if they didn't serve God, if they've been guilty of idolatry, the fact that they're going to serve God is quite important. The other thing is, where was the word oat used previously in the Torah? By Brit Milah. Oat Brit. Exactly when the Brit Milah was introduced, the word oat, if I'm not mistaken, was introduced there as well. It was back in source number 3, Pasuk Yud Aleph. That means this is the sign of the relationship. Now, knowing that, take a look at the Ramban in source number 16. And first of all, we're in trouble because the Ramban starts with Al Derech HaEmet. What does Derech HaEmet mean? I'm explaining things in the Kabbalistic and the mystical sense. Al Derech HaEmet v'zelecha ot kemo zeli isrim shana v'omer ki eye imach. So now, you do not understand anything from this Ramban? Yes, no, nothing?
Excuse me? It says, I will be with you tamid.
It's God's being within us. It's good. And that's the covenant. Look at source 17 now. This is the Ramban in Dvarim, of all places. This is on the bracha of Yosef. Habracha zot tova l'rosh Yosef l'kodkod nizir echav. Source 17. Otam haratzon shochnei sne tavo l'rosh Yosef. Va'al titama l'chefet shichane oto b'loshon nekeva kikim b'loshon aramit, and so on. Valderecha emet yomar shaharatzon shashachin bisne he tavo the rosh Yosef shabo yarim rosh v'iskir samuch makom mukeret ukamo rabim o yismoch al Hashem nechmad haniskar v'ratzon Hashem hashachin bisne tavo the rosh Yosef v'zot birchat Yaakov me'alavicha v'ezreka v'et shaddai v'recha. So now again, you have no idea what's going on, but you see that the Ramban is at least using some of the same words that we've seen today. So let's look at one more source. In source 18, it says, "Hinei anochi shaleach malach lefanech l'shamrcha b'derech l'vircha el makom asher hachinoti." I'm going to send an angel to be in your midst. By the way, this can either be something very good or something very bad. It could be something very good because he sent an angel in our midst. It could be something very bad because it means an angel's there and God isn't there. So there are two ways to understand this. Ve'al derech ha'amet, the Ramban writes, and again, you know you're in trouble whenever there's derech ha'amet in the Ramban. Hamalach hazeh shuvtachu bo bekan hu hamalach hagoel. By the way, who is the malach hagoel? Within whose bracha is that? Hamalach hagoeloti. That's the bracha Yaakov gives to. That's the bracha that he gives to Yosef. The malach hagoel is the bracha that he gives to Yosef. Menashe and Ephraim is Yosef. That's the bracha he gives to Yosef's children. Hamalach hagoel goes to Yosef. Asher Hashem agadol bikirbo. Then he goes on a little later and says, "Rabbeinu amru ki hi metatron." Metatron, by the way, is an angel who's called the Sar Hapnim. By the way, Metatron is absolutely modeled after Yosef. The way that Yosef is the Sar Hapnim by Paro, Metatron is the angel up above in heaven. V'zeh tam l'shmarcha b'derech l'vircha makom asher chinoti hu beit hamikdash v'chulei. Again, I didn't explain everything in these last couple of Rambans, especially because it's mystical. But essentially what he's saying is that there is this spiritual power which is connected to this malach, which is the spiritual power which is the bracha to Yosef, which is the spiritual power of God being within the Jewish people. So I have to, again, full stop right now. Because now what else do we realize? This is the continuation of the idea of Shaddai. That's part of what the blessing that Yosef receives. And this is connected to Brit Milah, which means, again, the way that Brit Milah is supposed to be an oath to sign within an individual, the same way there's supposed to be a covenant within the entire Jewish people where God will be within the people. That's the way that it is supposed to work. Unfortunately, there are times that we expel God and we expel the holiness from within us, and that's when we run ourselves into trouble. One time that we did this was when we were in Egypt. The God was expelled. The Jews are keeping their side of the bargain only in as much as they're slaves, and they may not have all that much choice about this. They've lost two elements which are interrelated, and those two elements are Brit Milah on the one hand, and it's the service of God on the other hand. What I've been pointing at is that these elements actually are very, very closely related spiritually to Yosef. I did not fully explain that, but that's really what the Ramban is pointing at over here in these sources. Now, with all this, I just want to explain one more thing which is completely ununderstandable and generally just we just skip over it because we don't know what the context is, and I have no doubt that this is what Naomi wanted to lead me to before, and that's the last source, source number 20. Vayelech Moshe vayashvu el yeter chotno vayomol orchona vashuva el achai asher b'mitzrayim. This is after the snare when God appears to him. By the way, if you didn't catch it along the way, the Ramban did say that the vision by the snare was something which eventually is something that represents Yosef. You say, what does Yosef do with the snare? Yosef has to do with everything over here. That's really part of the issue. Continue. Vayikach Moshe et ishto v'panav. We'll skip a little bit. Pasukav bet. Vamartel paro komar Hashem b'ni b'chari Yisrael v'omer eilecha shalach et b'ni v'yavdeni v'tamein l'shlacho hinei enochi hareget b'ncha b'chorecha. If you don't release my son, I will release your son. So the first reason this is really fascinating, because if we're right that Am Yisrael has rejected God and Am Yisrael stopped their covenant, God is still calling them my firstborn. God is still saying, this is my son. Shovu banim shovu. It could be that he's made mistakes, and it could be that they've sinned. It could be that the slavery is difficult on them, but this is still my son. But what happens afterwards? What happens immediately afterwards? Three psukim, we have no idea what it's talking about. God sends, bumps into Moshe along the way. What in the world is the story, this hotel along the way, a Brit Milah taking place? So it seems to be that perhaps that Am Yisrael weren't the only ones who stopped keeping the mitzvah of Brit Milah, that Moshe as a true son of Am Yisrael also doesn't fulfill. The question that comes up here, is it referring to his second son who was just born, which is one way of understanding it, although I would suggest that it's far more likely it's talking about his firstborn. Because right before that, what did God say? God says, tell Paro that Am Yisrael is my firstborn, and therefore you don't listen to what I'm saying. I'm going to kill your firstborn. But then we have one little problem. What's the little problem along the way? That Moshe has neglected to do a Brit Milah of his firstborn. So essentially, hold it a second. Am Yisrael are really unworthy to go out. Moshe is unworthy to take them out. And that's, by the way, something Moshe keeps trying to convince everyone, right? Keeps saying, who am I? I'm inadequate. So God says, you're right. You're inadequate. You deserve to die. By the way, I'm saying this now, this section, which is absolutely never understood, is actually a parallel to Am Yisrael. But God had every right to kill Am Yisrael at this point. Why? Because they didn't keep Brit Milah. But something takes place over here. Moshe, now, by the way, you want to go to the Nashim Tzad Kaniyot, Moshe's wife, right, his non-Jewish wife, even if you will, she's the one who comes in and performs the Brit Milah, and now everything shifts and everything changes and everything now is aligned, and now we can continue the march. Now Moshe can go down to Egypt, now Moshe could do Brit Milah, meaning Moshe could do down the Brit Milah on the firstborn of God, as it were, which is Am Yisrael. And now, as I said, everything now is aligned. Now Am Yisrael is keeping the Brit. Am Yisrael is keeping the Brit. They're still going to need some lessons in terms of believing in one God. And they're going to fall back every now and again. And the 10 plagues are lessons in theology. The 10 plagues are lessons to understand and to internalize that there really is one God. And whatever the Egyptians believe in terms of their mythology is just that, only mythology. But normally, as I said, this section right here is not understood what it has to do with anything. What I'm suggesting is that this is actually a microcosm of the larger problem which exists. And the problem is that Am Yisrael did not keep their side of the bargain, so therefore God no longer had to keep his part of the bargain. But God says, no, I am going to keep it, but I'm going to force you as well. And now we understand why Brit Milah is so intertwined together with the Korban Pesach, because this is essentially what took us out of Egypt. The Brit Milah is what makes us God's people once again, right, on the one hand, and the Korban Pesach then becomes just really the schut that God gives us. He gives us mitzvah to do in order for us to deserve, in order to go out. But without understanding this larger context, this little section over here just doesn't seem to fit in whatsoever. But now you realize this is really the Brit that God says, I'm going to keep, but in order for God to keep his side of the Brit, we have to be at least apparently forced to keep our side of the bridge.